can customize according to how you view the market. So, of course, if everybody will use the same large language model, then yeah, the value will go down dramatically very quickly. But if you give the customer the ability to create their own version, then basically you're just giving them better tools to play with the market according to how they view it.
This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Goldrock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. Welcome to the Definitely Uncertain podcast. And my name is Darren Rockman, and I'm a partner at Goldrock, the more than 20-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel around the world. And I welcome to the podcast, Professor Ronen Feldman. Hi, Ronen.
Thank you. It's pleasure to be here.
It's great. Thank you for joining us. So Ronen is a world leader in natural language processing. He's the founder and CEO of multiple companies, most recently Pronto NLP, and prior to that, a number of other companies like ClearForest, Amenity Analytics. He is a full professor at the Business School of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. He actually was the person that coined the term text mining and the author of the Text Mining Handbook. And amongst his other achievements, and there are many, he developed early systems for the Israeli intelligence units. He served as a consultant to NICE systems, to Intel, to the Bank of Israel, to Standard & Poor's, and a number of top hedge funds. And Ronen is here as with his hat on as a great understander of the world of artificial intelligence, of AI, as part of our attempt here on the podcast to understand that world a bit better, and specifically in this case, natural language processing. So Ronen, let's start off. What is natural language processing, and how is this technology being used in various industries, and what is its relationship to artificial intelligence?
So basically, natural language processing is a part of AI. AI has many different disciplines. One of them is machine vision, and another one is natural language processing. I would say that probably robotics, vision, and natural language processing are the three main areas of AI. But recently, definitely NLP got a huge boost because of all the ChatGPT and what OpenAI is doing. So if before that, most of the people had no idea what it is doing, now everybody knows. So what is natural language processing? The idea is to take a spoken language, usually it would be written language. You can, of course, take podcasts like this one and convert it to text. There is an amazing application called Whisper. You convert it to text and then we can analyze it. So the idea in NLP is to identify what are the main themes, what are the topics that are being discussed, what is the sentiment, try to summarize it, try to extract specific bits of information out of it. So I would say those are the main tasks. It's being used in almost every field of life, starting from the medical field, through defense, through finance, through social media, even politics. So really any topic is using natural language processing in a very intense way. And this is just going to be stronger in the coming years because of the huge improvement in large language models.
Right. And what we're seeing with ChatGPT for, you know, most of the audience who I suppose have experienced it or have certainly tried is an example of NLP, of natural language processing.
Yes.
Right. So let's just talk about some of those applications that you talked about. And, you know, you as being a, you know, an early researcher in this area, you know, you coined the term text mining back in 1995. So explain to us some of the uses of text mining and natural language processing and some of the work that you've done as a researcher and academic in the field and as the founder of a number of tech startups?
So I want to contrast search, you know, the classic Google search, and text mining.
Okay.
So in the classic Google search, basically you are giving a query. For instance, how to shut WhatsApp from showing messages while you do a podcast.
And a problem we were having just before we went on air.
And then basically you'll get a set of documents. So you're working in the document space. And in many cases, you need to read many documents in order to understand what's the right answer. In text mining, that definitely, you know, we coined it in 95, so it's almost 30 years ago. The idea was to move to the concept space. So we're moving from the document space to the concept space. So you need to do what is called a named entity recognition. You take the document, you identify the main entities inside. Now, what kinds of entities are you interested in? Depends on the domain. If it's in the medical field, it will be genes and proteins and diseases and drugs in the medical sense. If it would be in finance, it would be names of analysts and names of companies and products and technologies, and the relationships would be mergers and acquisitions and analyst recommendation, etc. So the idea of text mining was really, let's move from search and go to much more deeper analysis of the documents in order to get knowledge out of it.
Okay. And how is that now being applied in some of the products that are on the market already, like ChatGPT, and some of those that are coming onto the market or expected to come onto the market soon, like Microsoft Copilot, for example?
So a lot of the things basically people do now were also possible before, but now you can do it with much greater accuracy. So it's much more accurate than it used to be and with much less effort. So I would say the main thing, it's not that, you know, we invented things that were not possible before. It was possible before, but the amount of effort that you had to invest in order to get to the right result was probably 1,000 times bigger than it is now. So now you have a technology that is really accessible and you can deploy it for any field that you want. You need to know how to use it. But I think as time will pass, even that will become simpler and simpler. More people will be able to utilize this technology for whatever they're doing.
Right. And those that increase in simplicity or ability to use those, that's due to processing power, that's due to the way that the software algorithms are written. What's made it so much easier to use today?
So I think the main thing that really was a real breakthrough was that when the language models that actually exist for a really long time became large language models. So initially when you had models that were only, let's say, 400 megabytes, the ability to really do complex human intelligence tasks was very limited. When they became large, they actually really managed to capture a lot of the human knowledge and do things that are definitely much more complicated. For instance, solve logical problems. So this is like really core intelligence. I remember when I was accepted to the Talpiot project, we had to solve like for a full day all sorts of logical puzzles. I'm willing to bet that if you'll give all those logical puzzles to ChatGPT now, it will be admitted to Talpiot too.
Right.
Of course, you know, you are not allowed to take a computer into the test because otherwise it would be very hard to pick the right people.
Right. So, and when you say the size of those language models, you know, 500 megabytes, I should say, was an old one and now they're much larger. Does that mean that you're giving the AI processing so much more information to build its neural network, to build those connections, so that it can find patterns and then answer queries in a sensible and logical sense?
Yes. So it basically, there are two parts. One, it basically learns the way that people write. So it actually learns the style, and we'll talk about it probably later when we'll discuss fine tuning. But out of the box, based on the training data that you give it, and because you really give gigantic, like people talk about even Llama 2, which is now an open source model, is trained on 2 trillion tokens. It's a huge amount of text. And there are things that are trained on much bigger collections, like 10 trillion or 20 trillion. So you're really getting to almost everything that was written, of course, public. You cannot take things that are private,
right,
but you're taking almost all the human knowledge and encapsulating in a model that can generalize from that and can make deductions in ways that previously, before all that knowledge, it couldn't.
Right. Okay. So that's a great general overview of some of the sort of building blocks of this technology. Now let's talk about where it's going. And specifically, I want to focus in on the investment world, because that's where you operate and that's where Pronto NLP is operating. So where is AI and natural language processing being applied now in the investment world?
So initially, this is like really probably going back 25 years, there were already companies that took documents and did sentiment analysis. And it was okay. Probably they used then rule-based systems, so there were a lot of people that set and wrote patterns. Even in my previous company, we had 15 people that set and wrote patterns manually.
Okay, and sentiment analysis meaning, is this an optimistic document? Is this a pessimistic document?
So let's give an example.
Okay.
And then I'll even use a specific example that helped me to, I think, probably my best investment in the past year. And that's Meta Platforms. So Meta Platforms, the creator of Llama 2, is definitely one of the main players in AI. And using sentiment analysis, when you take the earning call and you identify what the CEO is saying, what the CFO is saying, what the other executives, what questions the analysts are asking, you see if it's positive or negative. Now you need to understand the context. So the level of sentiment analysis that was possible 25 years ago is much lower than what is possible now. So now we're able to create sentiment analysis systems that are way, way more accurate and way more predictive than what was possible before.
Okay.
And Meta specifically, we saw in Q2 2022 that the company is really, the sentiment was going down rapidly. It was probably one of the worst earning calls that I ever saw for any public company. So that was an amazing opportunity to short it, probably for the next 2-3 quarters. And the stock indeed went down like 40%. And then our system saw that, you know, things changed. And specifically, even before people started talking about it, we identified the theme of efficiency that they started to talk about. So we identified that this is something that we never discussed in the previous earnings calls. All of a sudden, from like 0 to 70 times in one earnings call, they discuss efficiency.
Right.
And basically, this was the trigger to go long on Meta, which we did. And since then, I think it went up 150%. So we identified also when it went, was the right time to short it? When was the right time to change the strategy and go along with it? This is all because of better NLP technology.
Okay, so this is within the context of your company, Pronto NLP, and I want to get back to Pronto NLP in a minute. But that's an example of how natural language processing, AI, is helping investors identify in the public company space. Can you give me another example, maybe outside of your direct work, where investors and professional investors or retail investors are using this type of technology?
Yes. So for instance, you invest in a debt or credit of distressed companies, and you get those huge documents that sometimes can be 500 pages or 1,000 pages, and you need to hire very expensive lawyers that charge, I don't know, $300, $400, $500 an hour.
Keep going up.
And now with AI, you can totally teach it what are the important things that you can identify within the documents. And then within 30 seconds, it will give you a summary of half a page of all the relevant information that you need to know about this document, and then you can compare it. So we did some experiments with that, and we saw that, for instance, we wanted to identify the waterfall of the different options in CLOs when basically the LIBOR ceases to exist.
Okay, we're getting quite technical here, but basically what Ronen's saying is he's looking at some debt where there are multiple lenders, and he's trying to work out who gets their money out first.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, and that's a very, you know, I would call it almost an arcane area of finance, something that most people have no idea. It's a very specialist area. And what you're saying is that a natural language model, AI, can then pull that apart and give you sensible answers.
Yes. And, you know, I mentioned CLOs, but it's basically any kind of fixed income. And there are so many different. There is mortgage-based. There are just bond offerings. And this is like a very virgin area, very little work was done there, and AI will totally change the way that
done. Yeah, is that going to be just using a generalist system like ChatGPT, the one that we're most familiar with?
No.
Or do these systems need to be trained specifically for this area, just like perhaps in medicine would need to be trained specifically?
Excellent question.
Good.
No, that
finally really... asked a good question, Ronen. You know, I work with a professor here. I'm totally outgunned.
So, there is a whole process called fine-tuning.
Okay.
So there is, I'll get a little bit technical, not too much. There is a technique called QLORA. This technique enables you to take a model, let's say Llama 1, Llama 2, because I need to use an open source model. Okay. I cannot do it on ChatGPT because it's not an open model, it's a proprietary model. So I'm taking an open source model and I'm feeding it with 2000 examples. So I only need 2000 examples that in many cases we use a bootstrapping approach. We start with like 5 examples and then using the model we are saying, okay, let's apply to other examples. You may need to do some fixes. And then you gradually build your collection of 2000 examples, and then you created something fine-tuned to solve a very specific problem. So I'll mention three, two are mentioned before, but I'll try to sharpen it. One example is I'm giving the system a paragraph, and I'm asking it to identify the importance of the paragraph. Like, is it really important, or it's just, okay, they mentioned it, maybe it's positive, but it's not crucial to the business of the company or to the way that we'll perform in the future. So find the importance, find what are the main topics that are being discussed, find the sentiment, and you can create a full large language model that is trained to do it, and it does it much better than ChatGPT.
Right.
We did the blind testing, and we saw that our much smaller models perform better than a GPT 3.5 or 4. Another example, you are a macro analyst. You hear the Fed talking, you know, like Powell last week, they increased another 25 basis points and they had a conference call. So you take the FOMC meeting notes.
The Fed meeting, yeah.
Yeah, and you want to identify the dovish, the hawkish, and the neutral sentences. It's very different than a normal sentiment for stocks. So again, use 2000 examples, and this is something that within 2 days, we managed to create an amazing large language model that knows to take both Fed or ECB or Bank of England documents and analyze it completely, and it helps you to predict if they'll continue to raise the interest rate or not.
Right. So what you're describing is a world where the role of the investment analyst is maybe not replaced, but certainly augmented massively by these types of technologies, maybe to the point where we need fewer analysts in a way that perhaps parallels what's happened to the mutual fund business as automated EFTs have taken the place. But what happens when every investor has access to all of the same tools? Because right now, what you're describing is a situation where those who are going to be quick will be able to use these to gain competitive advantage. But eventually, you would expect that every guy, you certainly would hope that every company, every investor would use something like Pronto NLP, or hopefully Pronto NLP. At that point in time, what happens?
So another great question. Basically, what I would say is there are two things how you can actually create a differentiation. One is you can customize according to how you view the market. So of course, if everybody will use the same large language model, then yeah, the value will go down dramatically very quickly. But if you give the customer the ability to create their own version, then basically you're just giving them better tools to play with the market according to how they view it. But yeah, I think probably they'll need less people. So
you're saying you're going to weight factors? You're going to say put more emphasis in the results you give me on sentiment, put more emphasis on management, put more emphasis on the numbers.
Yes. Okay. You can inject your own beliefs into
what we would call in other contexts biases.
Biases, yes.
Right.
So you can definitely create your own biases within the model, but we enable you to do it in a very easy way. Right. And you won't need an army of PhDs. You'll be able to do it with one or two people.
Right.
So will it reduce the number of needed people? Yeah, probably. But I think in general, an analyst that knows how to use AI tools will beat an analyst that doesn't know how to use
them. Right. Okay. So we've talked about some of the benefits and we're seeing in various different contexts for the use of AI. What are some of the pitfalls? So are there areas where this type of technology could either mislead investors or create some of the problems that the flash crash, for those of you who remember it, seems to have caused to the orderly working of markets, where it would have seemed, and again, I'm no expert in what happened, but it would have seemed that enough momentum was built into certain financial markets that computers then took over and created massive selling, which then pushed markets low very, very quickly, only for really very little good reason. So what are we going to see the same types of pitfalls with a technology like the ones that you're describing?
I assume it definitely can happen. I have actually another pitfall of the technology in general. It's actually not investment. It's actually in the medical world. Okay. But still, it's an interesting example. So this was actually when I went to the synagogue in Riverdale, where my daughter lives. And next to me was an ophthalmologist. And he's actually an expert in glaucoma. And he asked ChatGPT, can you give me the best 10 papers that deal with glaucoma? So it gave 10 papers with the abstracts, and he said, I did not recognize any of the papers. So I asked, okay, can you give me the URLs of the paper so I can check it? He said, I'm not connected to the internet. I'm updated till whatever. So he didn't give it. Then he went to a Google and searched for the titles. None of them exist.
Right. ChatGPT.
So this is hallucination. There are a lot of new things that are being done now to try to fix it. But I think definitely in the interim, issues related to hallucination will cause issues, and you need to put mechanisms.
Hallucination being when the natural language model hallucinates, it thinks that something is happening, even though it has happened, even though, and it's unable to distinguish between fact and fiction.
Yeah, because it's generating text, and it just generates text that doesn't exist.
Right. Now, clearly, that's a massive problem. For the medical world, and obviously any other use, you know, obviously life and death is much, much more important than financial matters.
Yes.
But when you think about that and you think about the progress that can be made, doesn't this nevertheless show a fundamental flaw, which may never be solved? So even if patches are put on the systems so that they are going to pick up more of these types of problems, at the core, if we can't understand how AI systems are reaching their conclusion, how will we ever be 100% sure that they're not hallucinating?
So there are definitely, I mean, I can tell you that we really put a lot of effort to check that what we get actually out of the machine is not a hallucination. So there are ways definitely to avoid that. It makes the system a little slower because we need to put all those brakes. So it's not as fast as if we didn't make those extra tests, but I don't think you have a choice. So there are ways to eliminate it, but it comes with a cost.
Is that elimination or is that reduction of risk?
No, it's, you can totally eliminate it.
Okay.
You can totally eliminate it. There are definitely techniques that you can totally eliminate it now.
Okay. Let's look at the backlash that seems to be building up at government levels, and you know, governments are slow to move, but there are certainly concerns about the impact of AI on society at large, and you know, the financial health of society is a strong underpinner of society's well-being. What regulatory matters do you think, or regulatory pushback do you think may affect the types of things that you're involved with and that we've discussed today?
So I think in finance in general, for instance, you don't want to have bots that would create investment advice that is totally unfounded. Mm-hmm. And if you manage to, you know, put it in the right places, it can totally create people to invest in their own companies. So,
or invest in a company that doesn't exist.
those definitely are things that probably the SEC will have to take care of. I mean, exactly mm-hmm. the same way that you are not allowed to use inside information, it will be something similar to that. You cannot use robots that will create unsubstantiated research. So I think that definitely is something that needs to be done to make sure that there is no false information that is being disseminated.
And when you talk about things like the Fed and the very big macro side of things, how do we prevent AI from creating a reality which is not real for policymakers and for major movers and shakers in things like foreign exchange markets and futures markets, where you know the sort of underpinning of the financial system? You know, one of the things we saw in 2008. was that the plumbing started to leak really badly, and it almost flooded the house. And that's a metaphor for what was going on with debt on the books of large institutions. And you know, like always, we're fighting the last year's war, so we've solved that problem. How do we stop AI from doing the same thing?
I think it definitely relates to what I said before, the whole issue of fake news and fake information is something that regulatory authorities will need to solve, and even give big fines to make sure that nobody is using technologies like that to create those fake news. Because the problem is that it's not only fake articles, it can be fake videos, you know, that you can imitate. Yes. People. It will be, this is the person, this is the same voice. Just he'll say crazy things that are not what he actually said. Right. So this is a huge threat.
And in the case of policymakers, fake statistics as well.
Yeah, you can create a lot of wrong data that will make policymakers to take the wrong decisions. Yeah, totally. So this is definitely something that, the whole cyber world will need to create tools that will be able to prevent all those issues related to sending information out of organizations, and definitely not taking fake information from the outside into the organization.
Right. Which is what all of those investment analysts are going to do when they're not going to be doing analysis. They're going to be they're going to be the guardians to make sure that the data is real.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Probably.
Okay. So I want to finish off. This has been a fascinating discussion and eye opening in many ways. You and I met at an event recently, and the room was split between the optimists and the pessimists when it came to AI. And I'm not sure what the odds were, but I think they were slightly on the pessimistic side. And these were people who are intimately involved in the world of AI. Where do you fall out?
No, I'm a eternal optimist. I think we'll find the right way to use it to just prosper humanity. I think people will be more efficient. They'll have more time, for hobbies. But yeah, the government needs to take the right steps so this will happen. So there is a lot of power in those technologies, and if there'll be good regulation and good utilization, I think it will just make the world a better place. So I'm definitely on the optimistic side, and I'm just looking to take it to more and more areas and make people's lives better using these technologies.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, that's amazing. For those of you who want to learn a little bit more about what Professor Ronen Feldman is doing, you can have a look at the website for Pronto NLP, his company, or you can look up one of his very many academic papers, which are available for those who have access to that type of thing. And I'm sure can be summarized quite easily by ChatGPT very quickly as well.
Probably.
Cheat sheet there. So thank you, Ronen. Really appreciate you joining the podcast.
Thank you, Darren. It was a real pleasure. And thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
Okay, great. And for those of you who enjoyed this, please give us a 5-star review, like us, do whatever it is, applaud in your car as you're waiting at a traffic light. But we appreciate all the feedback. And you can also send us an email to podcast@goldrockcap.com if you have ideas or suggestions, and you can look out for more podcasts coming your way soon. Thank you, Ronen, and thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Darren. Bye.
Bye-bye.